reaction to the referendum yesterday in Greece?
Well, my initial reaction was yahoo. I was very glad that the people supported the government's decision, the government that they put into office, to finally rebel against these austerity measures that we know hurt people around the globe.
What do you think are the implications of the vote that will obviously have an impact beyond Greece?
Well, hopefully at some point, I don't know when that will happen, the powers that be are going to realize that some of us have never believed what they've been doing for years and years and years. That includes Europe, that includes our own country here, the U.S. Anything that smacks of austerity is doing none of the things they're trying to make us believe it will do. The only thing it does is increase costs for the working people in all these countries, and it really ruins any kind of public health care that we have. These countries, including Greece, had a better safety net system than anything we could have here. What we have in our country here is things like Medicare, which, by the way, turns 50, and at the end of this month, we're going to have actions across the country supporting having a single-payer Medicare for All system. And we've got that, and we've got, like, the veterans system that takes care of our wounded. But other than that, there's really no real safety net like some of these countries like Greece has, and now theirs is in ruins because of increased debt that bankers put them in. And that's why for anybody to strike back and say, no, no more of this, this is not helping us, it's hurting it, that's a wonderful thing.
And here in the U.S., you mentioned programs like Medicare and the Veterans Administration. Now, they have been threatened with cuts in the current Congress. What would be the impact of that if such austerity measures were imposed here?
Well, they already are. They just haven't hit them maybe as hard as some other places. But that's the kind of system the world is in right now. You've got really governments being run by corporations. And so they set the rules. And you saw what happened, for example, in 08. You saw what happened. We bailed them out yet again. And there was no quid pro quo. There was no payback to the people in this country who work for a living. And there won't be, as long as they stick with the austerity measures that they say need to decrease the deficit instead of doing investing.
And you mentioned that you think that governments are being run by corporations. How specifically do you define that?
Well, you look at the Citizens United decision. When once they decided that money was free speech, which is ridiculous, you know, you've got the best government that best democracy, best republic that money can buy. You will never be able to take even large groups of working people and put their assets together and pay for legislation and influence that these multi-billionaires will. You're never going to be able to do that. And when I say corporations, you know, again, not people, despite what the decision said, not people, things. And these things can wield their influence. They know no nation. They know no loyalty. They're just a thing, and they do what we've allowed them to do. In this instance, in our country, they're running it, and I think in several others, too. When they did Medicare and Social Security and the Veterans Administration, the Bill of Rights, the only good things that we've done in this country, when they did things like that, that was an investment to the people who work and keep this country running. Right now, we're just so invested in giving kickbacks and bonuses to people who already have more money than they can spend in their lifetime, that you forget what it does to those of us who have so little. The poor have known it for a long, long time. But what we see as nurses, and it's one of the reasons we put together Global Nurses United that we are a part of, we are committed to no more austerity measures, and it doesn't matter if it's in our country or any other around the globe.
During the Veteran Administration scandal last year, there were calls within Congress to privatize the Veterans Administration, saying that it would be more efficient. What's the problem with that argument?
Well, it's typically made, whether it's the Veterans Administration or anything else, what you do is you starve the organization. And then when they can't do what they're supposed to do, you say, see, it doesn't work. We need to privatize it. When all of history has shown that privatizing, the only thing that does is to increase costs for everyone, those affected like the veterans, anybody who works for them. So whether it's a public entity like the Veterans Administration or something private, it's always starve, 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 because you've got to look at the bottom line. So in this case, Veterans Administration, you're dealing with the government. Otherwise, you'd be dealing with some other employer. But they all have the same goal in mind. And it's not to do what they are duty-bound to do for them. For the Veterans Administration, it would be to take care of the veterans, take care of future patients. But it doesn't really matter what they do for a living. The bottom line is all they look at, and that's what austerity does.
How does the Greek healthcare system compare to the system we have here in the United States?
Well, it was a public health system. I mentioned a safety net. We don't really have, honestly, we don't have a public health system, not a good one. We have fragmented care, and we saw that, for example, when we had the Ebola crisis that crossed borders, right? You've got, in most countries that have any kind of a subsidized system, whether you call it the national health care system, national health plan, whatever, there's a top entity, and they decide that when something like this happens, in this case it was Ebola, years ago in Canada it was SARS, this is how all entities will handle it, whether you're a hospital, a clinic, in the homes, their public health nurses, etc. Everybody's going to be handling it the same way. And you can do that. You have the wherewithal. In our country, you can't. You can make suggestions, like the CDC did. And the fact that they couldn't make up their mind didn't really make us feel comfortable at all. But when they finally did come out with some standards, again, it's suggestions that we hope hospitals will take. Greece had something better. They had a better safety net.
You mentioned Medicare for All, the expansion of Medicare. Mm-hmm. Could you explain what that means?
Well, we have the best, we could have the best thing in this country and plan it, liken it to what's been very successful in this country, which is Medicare. The only problem with Medicare is you have to be 65 or 66 or 67 to be eligible for it. Think of what it would be like, because we've already got the system in place that the minute you're born, that's it. You're on it. That's what we need, a new and improved Medicare system for all. And it would be regardless of ability to pay, and it would be regardless of whether or not you had a job. Babies don't have jobs. Let's hope not. So that is what we really need to do here. So when the Affordable Care Act came into being, you know, we were like, that's great to, you know, be able to insure more people than were insured before, but it's not health care for all. It's the ability to be insured. That has never worked well in any country, and certainly in ours. It's disastrous. So what we've got right now is firmly cemented in place a private, whether it's for-profit or not, system, and it's disastrous to us.
How is it disastrous?
Well, you've got, I mentioned some of them. You have to have a job. You have to, now even with the ACA, there are things you can do. But, you know, I always look at what people tell me. And even when the exchanges came on the market, talk to people. Ask them. It's said that you should be able to get insurance that you can afford. Well, I maintain that that's all relative. I know people who can't afford insurance yet. And they've gone through the exchanges, and they still say it's too much of their budget to be able to afford. So what you're going to get is it's going to undermine public health because people won't be insured, and even though they are, it's what I call underinsurance. I'm really worried about the underinsurance that people have. And there haven't been enough safeguards put in place that these private insurers cannot find a loophole through.
I think there are misconceptions about Medicare for All that have been promoted mainly by some of the more right-wing media that this would be a government control over people's health care, that the government would decide who gets health care and how much they get and who their doctor would be. And I wonder if you could maybe address some of those misconceptions.
Well, they are. Obviously. I mean, look back to what you saw in the news when the Tea Party came into being. What did you see? People who were railing against the government had huge signs, don't touch my Medicare. Do you think they would be that fond of it if they thought Medicare was a government takeover? People had access to their own physicians. It was just a way to pay for it. A way, it's something that you put money into all your life so that when people needed it, including you, it would be there as you age. That's what Medicare is, and that's what Medicare could be for everyone, not just when you reach a certain age.
Your group has also taken a stand for public unions. The Supreme Court decided that they will be hearing a case this fall, Friedrichs versus CTA, a challenge to public unions and requiring members to pay dues. What is your stance on that?
Well, we've been under attack for so long now, unions in this country, even more so than in other countries. You know, I'm not saying that other countries don't have it bad. Sometimes they kill union supporters. But we have just been devastated, and they don't stop. And one of the ways of the undoing of the unions would be one of these acts where you don't have to pay dues anymore. And so it encourages what we call free riders, free ridership, to say you can get all the benefits of a union, but you just don't have to pay for them. And so it's nothing new to us. People who call themselves right-to-work supporters have known this and have been pushing it for years. But we don't have a whole lot of people helping push back against it right now. So that would be really, really devastating. And one of the ways of pushing back against austerity, the measures that are hurting people in Greece and hurting us here and around the globe, is to have unions. You mean unions for the buffer, the system of checks and balances. And if you don't have us, I mean, ask any nurse. We understand what our main job is. It's to care for patients, whether they be the public because they're not patients yet, or whether they're within our four walls of the hospital or a clinic. We care for the patients, and we advocate for them. Now, how likely are you going to be to advocate for a patient when you get pushback about, for example, these people aren't paid enough as a wage, we're not going to have nurses, or we don't have enough staffing on this unit, it is unsafe for so few nurses to take care of this many patients. If you're worried about losing your job because you don't have a union and there's nothing to keep you there, once your boss says that's insubordination, you will take as many patients as we tell you you will take, you know, how do you think that affects the public?
One of the, I think, really compelling parts of your organization's statement on this Supreme Court case is a finding by America's Health Rankings that talked about the so-called right-to-work states, which right-to-work is a euphemism for an anti-union measures that have been passed by these states, that in the states that have these so-called right-to-work measures, 20 of 24 key measures affecting public health and safety, these states ranked worse for poverty rates, infant mortality, cardiovascular deaths, access to primary care physicians, and mental health services. Could you talk more about the impact on patients and on people in need of the attack on unions?
You have to be able to stand up for yourself in the case of nurses and patients to be able to do your job. When you're constantly attacked and when, you know, people still to this day in this country, as union density has continued to drop because of right-to-work folks and others who are always attacking unions, even as we say that in this country, polls show if people had a choice, they would still unionize. But the law is pretty much meaningless, our labor law. It sounds good on paper, but it isn't really enforced. So people still would choose to do that. It raises their standard of living. The statistics that you mentioned in so-called right-to-work states are not surprising to any of us who've had a chance to work union. This is what happens.
And just as a final takeaway, what do you think is the main message that Americans should take from what just happened in Greece this past weekend?
Start listening to the people who really have your back. People shouting for austerity and cutbacks, cutbacks, cutbacks to be paid for by you, you know, Joe and Jane working American, are not what we need. These people in Greece supported and upheld their belief good for them. And when it comes to us and who we choose to elect in this country, be looking at those things. You want someone that speaks up for you, those of you who actually work for a living in this country. I think you should take a look at Greece, watch carefully what happens, and hopefully somebody will help them in this hour of need.
Well, thank you so much. I have been speaking with Jean Ross. She's a registered nurse and co-president of National Nurses United, and speaking today in favor of the vote taken by the Greek people this past weekend, calling for no more austerity measures. Thank you, Jean, for joining us on KBOO today.
You're very welcome.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Should it be harder for landlords to evict their tenants for no reason at all?
Should safe and healthy homes come before the interests of private investment?
Is the rent too damn high?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, join us for the next Portland Renters Assembly.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right.
The next two assemblies are on Sunday, July 12th, from 12 to 2 p.m. at the North Portland Library, with speakers on how race intersects with gentrification.
And on Wednesday, July 15th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Colonel Sumner's Park, with speakers on community organizing and mobilizing.
Tell your story and join the conversation. For more information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break.